So Hebrews chapter 11, and I've not, there's not a large body of work for me being up here, I guess maybe about a dozen times, but this week was a little bit different than anything that I've run into before. I've told you I've gone as late as Friday and really not had an idea of what I was going to do. I just let the Lord, whatever the Lord speaks to it, and it'll hit you sooner or later. You just got to have faith. And I believe this totally. If everybody in churches had to get up here and do it one time, their prayer life would go up drastically. Because I promise. So that's the case with me. But I felt like I had a good idea from last week. And we spoke from Hebrews 3 about the, and then went into the Old Testament about the children of Israel and their Kadesh Barnea. And the Lord says, look, I've done everything. You take the land. And they don't go. And they start doubting. And then it's like, well, you sent us down here to kill us, Lord. It just spirals. So they don't go. And Paul says because of unbelief, they didn't go in. Right. So as I looked, Hebrews 11 is a chapter that's called the Hall of Faith. Where the Hebrew writer, may have been Paul, may have not been, he writes to the Jewish believers, the Jewish congregations, and says, I want you to have faith that Christ is the Messiah. And then he goes back in the Old Testament, and he gives a litany of these Old Testament saints who've had faith, and the different ways they've had faith. And he says, I want you to have the same faith in Christ as the Messiah. So it started out with Cain and Abel, and there's a lot of good stuff there. And I said, well, I think that's what it is. Missy asked me Friday night, she said, have you got everything ready? And I said, yeah, I think I do. And I kind of went through it and outlined it and kind of rehearsed a little bit. And then I got up Saturday morning and said, that's not it. So the reason was there was more about Cain than there was Abel. And I just don't feel right now as a congregation, we're at the point where we need to hear about Cain. You know, we need to hear about Abel. And fortunately, in Hebrews 11, there's so many circumstances here of faith that we have. And there's so many examples. So Tim, today, we're going to call this trust in God in all situations. And certainly we're in a situation where we need to trust God, but we've always been in situations, no matter what, that we need to trust God. This is nothing new. We all have every day of our lives. So one thing I want you to notice as we go into these, there's a common denominator. And that is, these were the most dire of circumstances when God worked. Okay? It's not like they had one thing going against them. They had everything going against them while you would look at it and say, there's no way possible this is going to work out. There's no way possible. If we put it in today's vernacular, today's example, you know, I've lost my job, I'm sick, I can't work, I've lost my car, I've lost my house, or lost my car, lost my wife, left me, dog bit me, banker's going to come tomorrow and take my house, you know, kids need new shoes, all that, and you're like, man, it just keeps piling up and piling up and piling up. And I think God used these circumstances to say, look, I'm going to make this as dire. I'm going to keep throwing things on you just to show that when I answer your prayer, you can say it came from God. There was nothing else because it's not humanly possible that this could work. So keep that in mind as we go through this. So go to verse 7. Verse 7, we start out with Noah. So we're going to talk Noah, Abraham, Abram, and Sarai, and Moses at the Red Sea. And we're going to talk briefly about each one. We're not going to go greatly in depth, but I want you to use each one as an example. So verse 7, by faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, or what had not been seen, rain. That's a big issue. If you tell everybody it's going to flood the earth and it's never rained before, that's a tough one. That takes some faith. Moved with fear. Why'd he move with fear? Well, the earth's going to flood. Everybody's going to die. Okay? Prepared an ark to the saving of his house. by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is by faith. That's almost Paul, body of Christ talk. We're heirs of God, co-heirs of Christ, right? So, because of his faith, and remember, Noah wasn't asked at that time, was he asked to believe in Jesus as the death, burial, and resurrection as a Savior? No. We're still thousands of years removed from that. What was he asked to do? Preach that it's going to rain, build an ark, and then go into the ark. Take two of a kind of all the animals. But faith of something to the world that seemed absolutely insane. Okay? So, a couple things. Go back to Genesis chapter 6. So let's look at that. Genesis chapter 6. So if you go by my Bible has headings like in the verses. So it starts with chapter 6, the ungodly multiply. And then it gets to verse 5 and it says the ungodly sin continually. And then in verse 6 and 7, right before 6, it said ungodly to be destroyed. So we're at the point where God says, it repented me that I've made men. I wish I'd never, it's got so bad, I wish I'd never made them. It was to that point. So if you go to verse 7, Noah, it goes through all that, but there's a big but here, but Noah. So here's the first thing he's got going against him. Noah is the only person of faith in on the entire earth. That's it. He didn't have a church to go to with brothers and sisters and people that uplift him. He didn't have all that. He was the only person of faith in the world. Okay? God used him because he had faith. All right? He knew he would listen. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. How did he find grace? Except, like we said, the death, burial, and resurrection? No. Jesus as Messiah? No. He found grace because of his faith. He was a righteous man. So he gives to, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generation, and Noah walked with God. Only man. Verse 10, Noah begets three sons. Verse 11, the earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shall you make in the ark, and you shall pitch it within and without will pitch. And he goes into the fashions. And then go verse 17, how he wanted it built, in other words. And then verse 17, and behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life. From under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. So that's the message of Noah. Okay? So I want to look at just a couple of things when we think about, yeah, we're in a transition. We're in a tough stage, no doubt about it at times. But what we've got compared to them is minute. Of everything that they had against them, and the only thing that upheld them was faith in God. That's it. So, first thing he had going against him. Number one, he's the only righteous guy, right? He's the only believer. You think about that. You are the only believer. If something happens to you, if he got hit in the head with a rock, if some wild beast, that's it. There's nobody left. That's how much pressure. But number one, first thing, he's out there preaching his ministry from what we believe to be 75 to 120 years, somewhere in that span, that it's going to rain. So he gets up, his very first message to the people, it's going to rain, it's going to come a flood, it's going to destroy the earth. Hey, you need to come on, you need to believe that, you need to come on the ark, you'll be saved. We've got a couple things, like I said. What's this rain talk about? Never rained. We don't know what you're talking about. Rain? Well, it's rain, it's water's going to come out of the sky. There's no way. No, it's never done that. It's not going to do it. We've never had a flood. The water's never come out of the banks. It's I've never had missing. I've never had water come up in the den underneath the floor and had to get that up. Never had any of that. Okay? Never rained any. Number two, what are the odds that it's going to rain enough to flood the entire earth? What are the odds of that? I'll use Jonathan, for example. You don't mind, I do that a lot. So if Jonathan comes in here next Sunday and said, folks, it's going to rain and it's going to flood every bit of Waynesboro, I mean like over your houses. Every last house. I live up here on the top of the hill, which I found out several years ago from FEMA as a flood zone, don't ask me, on the top of this hill. If Jonathan said it's going to flood over the top of your house, it's going to rain so much this week, these creeks down here are going to rise up and it's going to flood over the top of this hill, everything in Waynesboro, I'd say, Jonathan, old buddy, you've been riding around one lap too many on that riding lawnmower out in the sun. Go inside, sit down, relax a little bit. Watch the Braves, relax, okay? You're all right. We wouldn't believe it. We'd be like, oh, it's crazy guy going at it again, right? So his ministry is based on faith that is absolutely, the man makes zero sense at all. They think he is insane and lost his mind. And he's the only one who believes it. He's got a lot going against him. Okay? The third thing, it took 75 to 120 years to build the ark. He's preaching the whole time it's going to rain. So I could be like, I could move off somewhere and 60. These people lived a long time back then. He went on the ark, he was 600 years old, right? So let's say I go somewhere, I move off somewhere and I come back to Waynesboro and here's Noah out there building his ark. And I say, is that Noah guy still building his ark? No, it's been 60 years. But I remember when I was in middle school, Dad used to take me down there and we used to laugh at him, make fun of him, holler at him and all that. It was going to rain. 60 years. Oh, yeah, he's still doing it. And you're like, gosh, what a... He's wasted his whole life doing that. And just has made a fool out of it, a spectacle out of himself. You imagine, let's say it went 120 years and you don't have one convert. Not one. And people think you're nuts. It'd be like me coming in here every Sunday for 120 years and opening the church door, and I come here and sit by myself, pray by myself, sing a song by myself, lock it up, go home, come back the next Sunday, same thing. Next Sunday, same thing. Not one person except me enters the doors for 120 years. And Noah never wavered. Kept his faith, never wavered. That's how he found righteousness with God, faith. Faith led to obedience. Faith. All right? Look at Genesis chapter 7. Go to Genesis chapter 7, verse 7. So how many people at the end of 120 years believed? 8, right? Just his family. And Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him into the ark, because of the waters of the flood. So Noah's wife, 3 sons, 3 daughters-in-laws. That's 3 daughters-in-laws. That's it. 8. Not one convert. Nobody outside. Okay? Now, look at in the same chapter, verse 4. And look how that starts out. For yet 7 days I will cause it to rain upon the earth. Now go down to verse 10. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. What's the 7 days? So Noah and his family goes on the ark, right? God leaves the doors open. For 7 more days, here they sit on that ark. And it doesn't rain. For 7 whole days, after 120 years, and everybody thinks he's a nut, 7 more days. Can you imagine what the people thought about him? He goes on the ark and he just sits in there for a whole week. And they said, well, this is caps it right here. He's insane. This caps it. You talk about a lost cause. No converts. Everybody thinks he's crazy. He says it's going to do something it's never done. That's how much faith he has. And then he goes into ark for 7 more days and it doesn't rain. So why did he do that for 7 days? God's grace. God gave every opportunity for that generation that made him so repentant that he created to come onto the ark, salvation. Isn't that what he does of us? No matter how bad we mess up, it's grace, 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 grace. He's there for us. Take people in a lost world. Like Lehman used to say, never gave God a second thought for 50-something years. They've spent their whole life like that, but he still opens every door and gives every opportunity. And I think about the verse where sin abounds, grace abounds that much more. And this is a perfect case right here. Now, what's that mean for us? Grace abounds that much more for us. We're not nearly in the situation Noah was in. But God's grace abounds. I can see God's grace in here every day. Missy told me this week, she come home Sunday, she said, that church is going to be fine. She told me that. She said, we've always had a reputation of sticking together. And she said, there are people in it, they're going to stick together. And they love each other. She said, it's obvious. They love each other. They're going to be there. They're going to stick together. Church is going to be fine. It's obvious. So God's grace abounds on us that we can have grace toward each other. But if you look, God's grace is always there. God's grace is going to be fairer than for us in His church. In a situation not nearly as tough as what Noah faced. Now, go back to Hebrews 11. I should have said it. Bookmark Hebrews 11. We're going to go back there a couple times. So Hebrews 11, I want you to go to verse 8. Abraham and Sarah. Now boy, here's one really that man would look at and say, there's no way. By faith, verse 8, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out for a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out not knowing where he went. So that's when Abraham is called. Okay, and we're going to go into this and go back and look. But he goes out and God says, Abraham, pack up. I want you to go get away from your family. You're going to go to a land. I'm not going to tell you where. And then he can see later on, you're going to be the father of many nations. But there's no promises right off the bat. Abraham just goes. Okay? Verse 9. By faith, two big words, he sojourned into the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in the tabernacles of Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. So go to Genesis 11. Genesis 11. Now, I had really not paid much attention to the last verses in Genesis 11 to this week. I always thought Abraham's calling started in Genesis 12. Okay? So 200 years after the flood, man's right back in the same situation. Tower of Babel. I love how Benford, I always aggravate him about this. It's the greatest thing I've ever heard. Well, I remember one Wednesday night, we were here, and he said, I'm really not studied for this. I've not had a chance to prepare. He said, but we're going to start somewhere and it doesn't matter where we start. We're going to go back to the same place. And that was Tower of Babel, Genesis 11. So much went back to that. And I'll always remember that. That's how important it was. Okay? But the Tower of Babel, 200 years after Noah, you would have think people would have seen the light here. God destroyed the world. And you look, basically everybody come off the ark was righteous. The 3 sons, the family, they had had that experience. You'd think they would have been raised up in godly ways, but no. Okay? Just 200 years. You think about it. Wayne County, I was reading a history on Wayne County a little bit this week. Wayne County was settled by European settlers in 1820s. We're looking right at 200 years. So you can look in 200 years how it's multiplied. People multiply. Family reunions. You go to certain family reunions. People here, man, there's so many people at those family reunions, you don't even know them all. But that's how it multiplies. So 200 years, they've gone back to their same old way. So what do? They built a tower to heaven. We're going to be like God. Well, what did God do? He struck the tower. He separated the people, confused their languages, and he said, "Y'all, you people, you've got to split. Y'all got to go different ways. Y'all are staying together, and there's nothing that you won't do." That's what he says. There's nothing you're not capable of, and he's talking about evil. So he spread them out, confused the languages. So Abram at that time was in that society. Don't think Abram was a righteous man, was a church-going guy, was the Sunday school teacher or song leader or whatever. He was an idol worshiper. Everybody on the world at that time, within 200 years, were idol worshipers. Nobody worshiped God. So if you look at verse 27, it talks about the generations, chapter 11. And it talks about, and Haran, verse 28, died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity, Ur of the Chaldees. That was infamous for idol worship, all the people there. And he talks about Abram took wives in verse 29. Verse 30, Sarai, which was Abraham's wife, was barren. She had no child. This is going to play very big into this. Don't forget that. Verse 31, Terah took Abram his son and Lot and the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth from them from Ur of Chaldees into the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now look at chapter 12, verse 1. And the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, into a land that I will show you. Couple things. His family was successful. Okay, they were successful. Abram was a rich man. People before him were rich. That was what was you would probably call in that society a good upward mobile family. What's God say? Leave them. Leave them. You got to leave. Why? Idol worshiper. You can't be among them. Leave them. So here you've got a successful guy. Right around 50 years old, when he should be at the peak of his success, and God says, leave him. Go. Leave everything. Well, God, where do you want me to go? I'll tell you later. Just go. Pack up and go. Takes a lot of faith to do that. Why did he call Abram? Well, if Abram was an idol worshiper, why did he call him? He knew Abram had faith, and Abram would listen. He was the one that's crazy enough to listen. Okay, just like Noah. Okay, you think about it. Every one of these situations, there's nobody with them. They're a man without a country. It's them and nobody else. Okay, so he calls him out. He gave up everything and he had no idea where it was going. But what does Paul say about Abraham that his faith? By faith, he was found righteous. He did what he was asked to do. Okay? He believed God. That's what faith is. Believing what God says. That's what we're to do here. And the Bible tells us, now look, we're not going to get these, Benford calls them class A miracles. We're not going to get those in the day. I mean, the Red Sea's not going to part. Donkey's not going to turn around and talk to us. You know, those things are not going to happen. But God honors our faith. But here's the thing. We're not asking God to part the Red Sea. The miracles of the Old Testament, we're not asking for that. Like I said, what we've got right now, it's minor to what they had. As serious as it is, it's still serious. But God honors faith. And God will honor our faith if we believe Him at the Wayne County Bible Center. That's the point I'm trying to make. So go down, turn back to Hebrews rather, chapter 11. Now we're going to look at Abram and Sarah. Chapter 11. Verse 11 and 12. Like I said, just keep that bookmark. Now remember, Sarah's barren, right? Can't have kids. Through faith, also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age because she judged him faithful who had promised. Judged who faithful? She judged God. She knew God was faithful. Don't keep that in mind. God is faithful for him, those that believe. Verse 12. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, Abraham. Old man, 100 years old. Dead. Can't have kids. So many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand, which is by the seashore, innumerable. Okay? An impossible situation here. Go to Genesis 15. Genesis 15. And let's look at Abram's situation here, as far as children go. This was the Abrahamic covenant from God to Abraham that he was going to have a child. Now, you got to remember at this time, like we said, he's right around 50 years old. Okay? So start with verse 1. We'll go through verse 6. And after these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. Claim that promise. Now, like I said, I know I'm not trying to mix. This is even before law. I'm not trying to mix Old Testament and grace. But take that. If he is Abraham's strength, why is he not our strength? Okay? Just keep that in mind. As a church and individually, why would he not be your strength? Well, the only reason he wouldn't be is if you didn't have the faith to allow him to be that. Okay? Keep that in mind. Okay? I'm your strength, your shield, and your exceeding great reward. And Abram said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing that I go childless? This is important, Abram. I'm childless. That was a bad look back in that day. It was, you basically meant there was a curse on you if you were childless. And the steward of my house is Eleazar of Damascus. Okay? And Abram said, Behold, to me thou hast given me no seed, no children. And lo, one born in my house is mine heir. So what happens? When Abram dies, he can't give everything he has to the kid. He's got to give it to basically servant because he doesn't have any children. Do you remember? I remember seeing a Shakespeare play in high school, Henry VIII. Anne Boleyn can't have the child, and they go through all that, and he ends up having her killed. How the Church of England started, so he could get a divorce and find a wife who could have kids. Why? He couldn't have somebody, he couldn't have it, well, nobody could take the throne, and somebody else had to take it. They had to keep it in the family, right? So, verse 4, And behold, of the word of the Lord came to him, saying, This shall not, Eleazar is not going to be your heir. Okay? But he that shall come forth out of your own bowels shall be your heir. And he brought him abroad and said, Look now toward heaven and tell the stars if you be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. As many stars as up in heaven, that's how great your lineage. That's how many offspring that you're going to have. Okay, your descendants, that's how many you're going to have. And he believed, that's the key. He believed. Who believed? Abram believed. Sounded crazy. Crazy situation. I mean, you talk about a stretch of faith, but he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. He did what God asked him to do, and it was counted for righteousness. God rewards faith. God rewards faith. And I think everybody in their lives can claim that at one point or another. God, in your spiritual life, in your personal life, answered prayers. God rewards faith. Okay? Look at Genesis 21. Let me look here. I may not go to that. Let's wait on that one. Okay? Now, I'm sorry, turn to Genesis 17. Genesis 17. I've got you wandering around. Genesis 17, I'm sorry. So let's look at the situation here. Impossible situation. Sarai is already barren. She can't have a kid. Already barren. All right? So, Genesis 17, verses 15 through 17. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be upon her. Now here Abraham has a lapse of faith. Now God's already made the promise. But he has a lapse of faith. And what's Abraham do? Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 bear a child? Now I want you to look at the circumstances here. And like I said, it's like God put it in such, just kept piling on things, adversity here that made it so much going against them that there's no way this can work. Number one, Abraham and Sarah were old. He's 100, she's 90. And I know they lived longer back then, but they started not, the age started going down, their longevity after the flood. Started going down. So they're not living as long as they had. So in that time, they're still too old to have kids. So to make matters worse, Sarai's barren. She never could have a kid. She was not able to have a child. Number three, they waited 50 years. Between Genesis 15 and when the child is born, you're talking about 50 years. So God promised something that to man is impossible. Can't happen. You're barren. You can't have a kid, but you're going to have one. And then for 50 years, they wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait, and nothing happens. Now they're 100 years old. So it's like, well, God's forgot. That's what we would think. Or God didn't tell you that. You're one of these people that hears this stuff. God didn't tell you that. You know, there's so many things, reasons not to believe it. Okay? Be like Missy and I having a child when we're 100. I hope that don't happen. But it'd be impossible, right? All of these circumstances that make no sense. But it was done on purpose. This wasn't a situation. Well, we didn't think we could ever have a kid. But we ended up having one. You know, that happens some. Happens a lot, maybe. Okay? Maybe sometimes a person's older. And they have, you'll hear a guy's every now and then in their 60s talking about, you know, have a kid. But 100? And to a wife that can't have kids in the first place and 50 years between the promise and having a kid, everything against it said there's no way it could happen. It is an impossible situation. But it said God honors faith. So let's see here. This is where Genesis 21 come in. Genesis 21. The birth of Isaac. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said. Some key words here. He did what he said he was going to do. Okay? And the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. So he did as he was going to do. He did it just as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken it to him. Three examples in those two verses of God doing what he said he was going to do. God honors faith. Okay? God said if we're faithful, He'll take care of us. And that's what I'm going to live on, and that's what I'm going to trust on. That's what we all need to trust on here. And it's happened over and over, like I said, in just the most dire circumstances you can imagine, where it seems impossible. I want to look at one more. Turn back to Hebrews 11. He talks about Moses. Hebrews 11, verse 29, or excuse me, verse 24. So, in verse 23, he speaks about Moses' parents, and we know that his parents were, he wasn't a proper child, it said, and they were not afraid of the king's commandments. So, and then it goes down to things through Noah's life where he'd shown faith, but I want you to go down to verse 29. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians following or tried to do as well were drowned. Okay? So go to Exodus 14. This is the last example. Now man, you talk about a bad situation now. We know the story. Moses, or rather Israel, just as they had promised Abraham, Exodus 14, just as they had promised Israel, or Abraham rather, he said, you're going to have a great nation. I'm promising you the land. I'm promising you all this. Your lineage, it's going to be like the stars, you know, the sands, all that. But he said, there's going to be about 400 years where you're going to be in captivity. The land's not yours, which is Egypt. But you're going to come out, right? So what had happened? God had used Moses to be the spokesman to go to Pharaoh. We know, let my people go. We all know that story. He sent plagues, one plague after another. God hardened Pharaoh's heart each time. So finally, he says what? Take the blood, the sacrifice, put it over the door, okay? And the death angel is going to come through, and everybody that has the blood on the door will spare the firstborn son. Everybody that doesn't have it, the firstborn son will die. Well, what happened? Nobody in Egypt has it. All the Israelites have it. Well, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back for Pharaoh. And in fact, there's such a point after his firstborn dies too. Every firstborn in Egypt dies that night, except Israel. And they're like, look, get out of here. We'll give you, they absolutely fleece the Egyptians because they're, look, you get out of here and we'll give you everything. They're loading them down with gold and everything. And God said, look, we'll pay you to leave. Just get out of here. Okay, what have you done to us? Get out. So they leave. They're out in the wilderness for 40 years. We talked about that last week, right? But Exodus 14, look at verses 3 through 9. So Pharaoh's going to follow. For Pharaoh will save the children of Israel. They are entangled in the land, and the wilderness have shut them in. That's big. They're entangled in the land, and it shut them in. They got the Red Sea on one side. They got impassable mountains on the other, and are getting ready to have the whole Egyptian army behind them, looking to slaughter. Okay? And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. Why'd he do this? I'm going to put you in a tougher situation, and it's going to look like every one of you are going to die. Why? So when I deliver you, they'll know I'm Lord. Okay? I'm God. We'll make it as tough as I can make it, as verse as I can make it. And it was told, the king of Egypt and the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people, and they said, why have we done this, that we've let Israel go from serving us? We had it made. We got all these people doing our work for us. We're a mighty country. We're a rich country, and they're doing all the work. This is why we let them go. And he made ready his chariot and took his people from him, And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with an high hand, and the Egyptians pursued after them, and the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them and camped by the sea. Overtook them. Followed. Impact. We can't get by this sea. Couple things here. I did some research on this. Pharaoh's army was 100,000. 100,000. And they were hardened. They would do anything. They weren't, most of them weren't brought up militarily. They were slaves themselves. And they had one option: be bloodthirsty soldiers or go back into slavery. And they said, we'll choose the first one. We ain't going back into slavery. We'll do anything. So these were motivated, rough, hardened killers. Okay? There are over 100,000 of them. And according to this, they took all the chariots, the entire army. 100,000 soldiers, the entire Egyptian army. Well, there's one thing going against them. The other thing against them was the Red Sea was in front. Okay? Now, I don't know if you've thought much about the Red Sea. I thought about it, and it's kind of like maybe the Tennessee River down here parting a Clifton, and they walk across. But I saw a thing on social media back a couple of years ago, and it came across, and it was like this graphic, like, not like a cartoon, but almost like an AI thing. And it's showing the depths of the ocean. It was really neat. It took about 2.5-3 minutes, and it's like showing the depths of the ocean. So they start out something really shallow, and it starts getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I wasn't looking, trying to find for the Red Sea, but it hit me that about the 90th percentile of this, as far as being deep, the Red Sea popped up. And I had no idea that it was deeper than the Black Sea. It was deeper than the Mediterranean. It was deeper than any of our Great Lakes. I mean, this thing was deep. Outside the oceans, it was probably one of the deepest bodies of water in the world. Okay? The average depth of the Red Sea is 1,610 feet. That's deep. 1,600 feet deep. Now, the whole thing's not 1,600 feet. It's deeper in some spots. It's more shallow in others. So, what about... maybe they went across the shallow end. Well, according to what I read, the shallow part, 40% of it's pretty shallow. It's only 330 feet deep. Okay? That's shallow end. Or if you want to get real shallow, Ken, 25% of it, the most shallow part, is 160 feet deep. 16 floors. It's deep. Tennessee River. How deep do you think the average Tennessee River depth is?
9 feet.
9 feet. That's right. 9 feet. So you're talking about the average of the Tennessee River and the average of the Red Sea almost being 200 times deeper. Okay? There's no way. We can't wade across this. You know, we'll... I'll get one of the horses and I'll stand up on its back and we'll go across. That ain't gonna happen. It's deep. So we're shut in, as the Bible said. We've got 100,000 killers behind us, and we've got a sea here in front of us that's 1,600 feet deep on average. Well, what happens? You know what happens. Raises the rod, the waters part back, they go on dry land. The Egyptians come behind him, and what happens? He takes his arm down, the waters come on them, they drown, every one of them, kills every one of them. An impossible situation. Death behind them, an impassable sea in front of them. God did it on purpose. He didn't give them an out. There was no out. It wasn't like, you know, if you go down through this desert and get away from them, you can cross somewhere else and you'll get away. He didn't want them to escape. There was no escape. God said, I'm going to put you in a seemingly deadly situation with no hope and no end on purpose. And I'm going to destroy them right in front of your eyes, and the whole world's going to know that I'm God. Why? Moses' faith. I want you to remember this. He did not save Israel because of their faith. Their faith was worse than ours. They had no faith. Moses did. He saved them because, really, of one man's faith. Moses believed. Moses believed, and it spared the whole nation. Now, God had already made the promises, but he had to do it on belief. Moses believed. Noah believed. Abram believed. Sarah believed. Impossible situations, God comes through. No matter what we face in our lives or here, God is saying, trust me. I honor faith. I see your faith as a believer, as righteousness. It doesn't save you that you believe I'll do something. You have to accept the death, burial, and resurrection. But that produces works. Your works as evidence of your salvation is that you have faith. So I'm going to live on it. Personally, we've had things that's happened this week that we've really had in our family. We've had to pray about strong and said, Lord, we're just going to trust you here. Medical situations, we're going to trust you here and just hope it turns out well. If it don't, we're still going to trust you. Well, God watches over you. Okay? He has. He's done it over and over. As a church, we're going to trust. We're going to trust. God will honor our faith. And I know you guys have got it. I know you guys have got it. Martha Jo, will you come play, please? So I know this message today, it's just like most of them, it's for believers. It's for people here that know Jesus, have a relationship with him. So I want you to just pray, Lord, if my faith is weak, strengthen it. Help me not to doubt. No matter how sometimes tough it gets, no matter how emotional I get, no matter how many times I might ask God why, or I may say, what's the future? Maybe I don't have faith in the future for my personal life, for my family's personal life, for a job, for a situation, for the church. Trust. And God says, I will honor it. Now, the answer may not be the way you exactly think it's going to be. It's going to be in God's time. It's going to be God's answer. We're not going to tell God exactly how and when to answer it. We're just going to say, God, I trust you explicitly 100% for whatever you do. And we'll thank you and we'll praise you for it. And God will say, I'll honor that. Okay. Why don't you pray, please?